Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars, yelling, give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe that you are a hater. It is that time of week where we get our interview on, and joining us, the man who once beat Eli Manning in a high school playoff game. Do I have that right, Michael Smith?
Yeah, you do. Eli remembers it. It taught him how to be clutch.
He was a freshman, right?
He was still a Manning, though.
You were a senior, right?
He was still a Manning. They offset each other. The age difference offsets the genetic advantages that he had. That boy was trained to be a quarterback since he came out the womb. So for a black boy from a New Orleans public school to beat a Manning from Isidore Newman School was monumental. On the road, in the rain.
In the rain. Did you score four touchdowns in one game?
No, I know I'm honest about it. It was 8-7. It was a touchdown pass and a 2-point conversion, both corner fade routes.
What style of quarterback were you?
Not very good.
I was
a scrambler. But I was also a pretty, sophisticated quarterback in the classroom. It was a disconnect between the Michael Smith that understood the plays and the concepts in the meetings versus the one that took the field. Couldn't quite execute it, but my best moments when I took off and ran,
I'm with you. That's not like me with basketball. Here's me with basketball. One-on-one, back in my day, I was actually like pretty good to really good, right?
Yeah.
But as you added additional players to the floor, it just all became a little too much for me to have to process in real time. And then when you added people in a crowd,
oh my God,
it became an outright disaster.
Well, let me ask you something. Let me ask the skinny baller this question. So, like, were you always among the taller kids, or did you have a growth spurt? Like, how did that work?
No, see, you have to remember, I am a grade skipper.
Ah.
And on top of being a grade skipper, my birthday is August 26th, and the rollover date in Texas for grades is September 1st.
Okay.
Right? So I remember that.
So you were super young.
Yes. The best athlete in our class, because, kids get left back, right? No disrespect. But the best athlete in our class, his birthday was in September of 1977. My birthday is August of 1980.
Mm.
You see what I mean?
I got you.
Yeah, so I was like fighting an uphill battle. When things were leveled off by age, I was all right.
Right.
You level that thing off by grade, and man, I was the child left behind.
But you were still tall though, right?
No, I didn't grow. I was actually 5'4" at the end of my sophomore year of high school.
Really?
Yeah. And I was 5'8" or 5'9" at the beginning of junior year.
Okay. And when'd you get to be 6'3"?
For freshman year of college, rounded that out.
Really?
Yeah, but also in between, my knees went bad.
Okay.
So I was actually, I couldn't hang on long enough to achieve any of the spoils that could have come my way.
Yeah. See, you grew the right way, which was conducive to probably your skill set. So you were a perimeter player that grew up to be, more of a forward type, I imagine, right?
Yeah, because I ain't big man. I'm tall man.
So I was big man and tall man at a young age.
Oh.
I thought I was Hakeem Olajuwon on the low block, right? Because I had the baseline fadeaway down.
Yeah.
But that was like 7th, 8th grade. I was about 5'11", 6 feet, so I was among the taller kids. Once I got to high school and had not worked on my handles or my shot, I was a man without a country. I switched to football.
It's so over. See, something I think that you could probably glean from television, but you might not get. Michael Smith is not a small man.
I'm not a small man, but I'm not tall either. A lot of people think I'm tall because I got a long torso. So when I'm sitting, I look taller than I really am because, I stand next to you. You got 3 inches. You got a good 3 inches, if not more, on me.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize that until you said it right there. You play it off well.
It's all about the torso. I got short legs, long torso.
Now, there's a real skill. Honestly, I think there's a real skill into making people believe that you are taller than you are. Because I got a homeboy. I talked about this. He's 5'6". And it was years before I realized he was 5'6". And he told me one time that it was just because he felt like, he carried himself with a certain kind of confidence. And you know why he carried himself with that confidence? He like a nth degree Taekwondo black belt.
Uh-huh. That'll do it.
Yeah. He 5'6", but he ready to go 6'5".
Yeah, right. He ready to go. And as you always say, what's the difference in the fight?
Yep, want to. Want to. Who desires this?
Yes.
Although, the one thing about want to, if on that level, the only thing that could combat want to perfectly in a fight is knowledge
training.
Of martial arts.
Absolutely. Look, my oldest daughter and my son are both Taekwondo black belts. They're working on their second degree right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My wife has got a black belt too, but it's a little different when you're her age. No disrespect.
Your wife.
They're great on the curve.
Hold up. Your wife is about the high ya?
She is. She is. Yeah. No, we're a Taekwondo family, man. You'll find us in a tournament all over the country. Matter of fact, you know, bringing all the way into the family discussions. Last night I had an hour long conversation. My daughter, she wants to go with her instructor to Korea for 5 weeks this summer. Her instructor is a world grandmaster, world champion several times over. He's taking a few students to Korea this summer to train. She wants to go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm a sender.
Now, have you learned how to do that haya?
I don't do Taekwondo. I take Krav Maga.
Oh, that's a different kind of haya?
It's much different. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Less of an art and more of a, I'm trying to end this quickly.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
It's really self-defense. I'm not the biggest badass. I'm not trying to, you know, boast or nothing like that. But since we're discussing it, I do take Krav Maga training, which is Israeli military,
That right there.
Yeah, exactly.
They say Max know how to do that.
I believe it. You know what? And a matter of fact, I think somebody did tell me that Kellerman took Krav Maga too. Yeah.
It makes sense. Yeah. Right. It all goes together. But I was just thinking, if your son is out here doing that high ya, you better learn some at some point. Otherwise, it's his house.
I got that issue with my daughter. It's actually my daughter. My oldest daughter, she's 12.
Oh, that's right. She is the oldest.
And she's taller than my wife. And so even trying to talk to her is a little awkward these days, because looking her in the eye, she could look me back in the eye. And I see this look on her face like she thinks she could take me. I'm pretty sure she thinks she could take me. And here's the thing. Since she don't listen to podcasts, I'll go ahead and divulge this. She probably could. I'm not bragging. You know how parents always talk about how great their kids are? This girl could be an Olympian in Taekwondo if she wants. Because opposite of me, she is legit tall with the long legs and flexibility, which is everything in Taekwondo.
Yeah.
So she could reach you from about 6 feet away. She'll reach you with a roundhouse kick and knock you out.
Okay, so like she might actually run the house. That's cool.
But
I do feel like no matter what kind of high ya we out here talking about.
Old man strength.
Yeah, your son don't want, he still don't want the problems.
No. He know I hit him in the chest. Square in the chest. That solo plex sternum area. He know I hit him right there in a second. I had to tell him today. He was talking back to his mom. I'm like, say, bro.
Uh-oh.
That's my wife and your mama.
Uh-oh.
In that order.
How old is he now?
He's 10. You know, so he's feeling himself. As my PE teacher used to say back in the day.
Spelling himself.
Then older getting mighty strong.
Yeah. But do you remember, like, that one time that you said that one thing that made some grown man let you know what the grown man rules were since you thought you were a grown man?
Absolutely. I remember, and it was one time. In my house, it was one time. And so every old man after that, every old woman after that, for that matter, because I was more afraid of my mom than I was my dad growing up. Because my mom, it almost like she felt like she took it as a badge of honor that she can kick my ass.
Yes.
Like she was, and she had to show as a teenager, it just got out of hand. Cause like, you know, I'm feeling a little mature. Like, you know, I got a little job. I got income coming in, you know, so I'm feeling like I could kind of have an opinion, not talk back. Have an opinion. See, in 2019, kids talk back. Back then, we might have had an opinion that we delivered respectfully. And even that was going too far. So, you know, but she just felt like she needed to, like, remind me that no matter how big and strong I got, that street knowledge I couldn't mess with. So she literally got on top of me. And, like, she didn't quite beat the hell out of me, but she wanted to let me know, like, you cannot take me. And it wasn't even both. I can't even, like, hide behind the, well, that was my mom. So I didn't want to like hurt her.
Right.
Or I didn't want to get too. Nah, man. Like she had me. She had, and it wasn't nothing I could do about it. That was just that New Orleans black woman strength. You know?
See, my dad went and took a job out of town when I was 14. So he wasn't there for these sorts of situations.
Oh, those developmental years.
Yeah, but my brother, who's 13 years older than me, moved back in around the same time.
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic right there.
And he and I are in different weight classes.
Okay.
We are of completely different body types. And he was the regulator where it was just like, yep, nope. So you
got the height, he got the muscle.
No, he got both.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
That was like, so this is ha-ha funny when you say it to your friends, but you up against the wall right now.
Right.
Okay, there it is. And it was a strong bit of want to. My homeboy, I've told this story many times, but this is maybe the, okay, so he lived with his mom and his dad lived elsewhere. His dad was a Black Panther and a bodybuilder.
Okay.
And I believe he eventually became a pastor.
That's a hell of a combination right there.
But note that I said eventually became a pastor, which implies that there were stops along the way.
Correct.
So he said, you know, that thing where he's coming, decide he's going to go out and come back when he want to or whatever. His mama can't really do nothing about it. He said one night he came back in, lady opened the door, said his mama was just sitting on the couch reading a magazine. He said he looked at her, like threw his hand up, you know, dismissively. Said he walked past her, said he got in his bedroom, turned on the light, and boom, his pops sitting on the bed. The thing you have to understand is my boy lived in San Jose. His pops lived in Los Angeles.
Oh, he made the trip.
Yes. He has no frame of reference, like no way to know this is coming.
He made the trip. So Pop pissed. Pops is sitting there like, you made me come from L.A.?
Yes.
To the Bay?
Yes. Grabbed him by the throat, put him on the wall with his ankles dangling. And that's that. That's the end, right?
Right. Message received.
Messages.
I haven't gotten there with my kids just yet. Nah. Just yet. But I fear that it's coming. Like, yeah, I stopped spanking my kids when they were little because it wasn't doing anything for me or them.
Right.
It wasn't the type of relationship that I wanted with them. I didn't want. It was an unhealthy fear.
Yeah.
That was developing, especially with my son. Well, I saw again. This is very early, and I don't think he remembers it at all now. But I saw a nervousness, and I didn't want that. You know, the fear we're talking about is like. Okay, a respectful kind of fear. Know that it will go down if it has to, but not a fear that's not rooted in love.
Right.
So I got away from corporal punishment early on. That said, my oldest two still remember it enough to where my voice and my threats carry a little bit of weight.
Right.
But to your point, the older they get and the more advanced they get, look, I'm not just taking Krav Maga to protect myself from these streets. You know, like I'm watching them at Taekwondo. I'm like, man, they got some skills to them. And then the worst one is my baby girl, my 6-year-old, because she's never had me put my hands on her.
She's six already.
She's just out of pocket, completely out of pocket. Like, that's the one that actually runs the house as a 6-year-old. Because she ain't never had it. She doesn't even have the subconscious frame of reference to what it's like when daddy loses it.
Yeah, hey, man, this is, you know, I caught up with you on these matters.
You know, and that's what's going on. That's what I'm doing nowadays. A lot of people say, what you doing nowadays? I'm just trying to be the best dad I could be, man. I'm trying to get these kids to adulthood with as few scars as possible. That's it.
And you're trying to entrench yourself and make sure you're still in charge of this house.
Yes. And half the time it's refereeing, because my wife is the one that's going off most of the time. I'm the good cop, to be honest with you. I walk a fine line between being a good cop but in the more relaxed, liberal of the two of us, but also the one that is like, you know, the safety.
Yeah.
When the rubber meets the road, Pop's got to come in. So it's an interesting balance.
And she know that, huh? Yeah.
Exactly.
We can't ignore that, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man.
The martial arts.
Yes.
They are,
which also means I know what line not to cross with my wife. There's that too.
Affirmative.
Yeah.
Affirmative. Now, you are from New Orleans.
Born and raised.
Are you a Saints fan?
Not since January 1993.
Oh, is that when the Falcons beat them in the playoffs?
The year after.
New Orleans native Michael Haynes?
Yes, the one they gave $10 million to.
And then he did what for the Saints?
Can I say that? Can you believe me?
Yeah, you all good.
For $10 million. I gave him one more year after that. The year I'm talking about is when they lost a 20-3 halftime lead to Randall Cunningham and the Eagles in the Dome.
That's when
I divorced the Saints. So for me right now, to answer your question, the Saints are my team with benefits. As in, like, I'm not committed to them. I don't ride or die with them. I don't live and die with them. I get to enjoy, you know, the spoils of being from New Orleans when it's convenient, vis-a-vis the Saints, and knowing what it means to the city. So 2009, I cried. The little boy in me cried. But all the heartbreak and disappointment and everything that people dealing with now or being robbed by the league or robbed by as a lot of them believe, or robbed by the refs, no, I don't have to suffer through that.
Dude, I honestly have to say, man, and I'm not going to do it to y'all again, Saints fan. Like, if y'all are listening, don't worry. I'm not going to.
I think they didn't already disassociated themselves from you, man.
No.
Because I know they're trying to avoid it. So unless they're just trying to torture themselves, they didn't tune you out a lot.
You know what, though? I think in the end, they recognize that I am fair. And when the Falcons blew that lead in that Super Bowl, I gave it to them the exact same way because they struggle to reconcile. The thing with me is I don't root for the Falcons.
Yeah, what's your story with them?
I mean, went through a lot, right? And sometimes when the quarterback get caught fighting dogs, you just need a clean break.
So that was it. The Vic thing was yours.
Oh, yeah, I just had to go at that point.
Oh, okay.
I just couldn't. Okay. There was really no coming back after that. And you have to remember, surrounding Michael Vick and the dogs and everything else, not only did they have that awful year
With Petrino.
Yeah. But man, the conversation surrounding the Falcons and who was saying what was mad uncomfortable.
I can imagine that was stressful being a fan at that time.
Yeah. And so I was just like, nah, I don't really see no reason to like continue to invest in this. It honestly took a player unlike any other that we had seen to really get this thing cracking in the first place.
Okay. I was about to say, were you just born into your Falcons fandom? Or
yeah.
Did you...
You know, you got to remember, I was born in Atlanta.
For sure.
So
yeah,
like
yeah.
when we moved to Houston when I was 7, so I had all my teams with me basically when we got there.
Okay.
So I was down with the Falcons and then, you know, we had Dion, you know what I'm saying? Like I was in college for the Super Bowl run. So I was, you know, in town when the man of the year got caught soliciting a prostitute. Can't forget about that one. You know, so like I did it. I rolled with it. I made moves along those ways. But then I decided I ain't really want to do that no more. And people are like in this industry. Like, people got their teams. It always goes, like, people don't realize that players have their teams. And cats get into the league and still root for whatever team they rooted for their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that stuff doesn't change. And so we all got our teams, but when you do this every day, it does get to be a little stressful to be out here, like, actually rooting for a team while trying to do this.
Yeah, I gave up on the Saints. And I wasn't even a Saints fan, obviously not old enough, through the ancient years. I didn't experience that. So God bless the people that have stuck with them since 67.
There ain't but 15 of them and you know it.
Well, alive, but a lot of
you
them.
You know, no, come on. This is my thing with Saints fans.
What's
you
that?
Know this. A whole lot more of them after Drew Brees than before. Ain't everybody been there forever?
No, that's not true.
You really think? I know.
That's all we got. That's all we got. Like the reason there are very few communities, and I know everybody says this, but there are very few communities that can match the relationship of New Orleans with the Saints. Part of it is, unlike other major metropolises, and look, New Orleans, obviously, you know, it's a big little city anyway. It's not a major market, but a famous place. Let's call it that. We for a long time didn't have a basketball team. For some reason, Utah still called up the Jazz. That just bothered me for
the
years.
The most ironic
like,
name
stop.
Ever.
Like, change your name. Just change your name. Okay? But, you know, I didn't grow up with a basketball team there. Never had a baseball team. We had the AAA, the Astros affiliate, the Zephyrs for a long time. But the Saints, man, that was all we had. And we identify with them through and through. It's in our fabric. So, no, I don't – Drew Brees was not a, oh, okay, now we're Saints fans type thing. Or we're going to jump on this bandwagon because they're good. No. Like, you're born into that, and you have no choice. Same with, you know, I end up moving to New England. Similar dynamic with Red Sox fans.
I got you.
You got no choice. Now, Drew Brees just made him arrogant. Like,
okay.
09 just made him more outspoken. And you didn't hear from him before.
Okay, that's what it is.
There wasn't a whole
then.
Lot to brag about.
Okay, that's what it is.
And then your ears a little bit to the streets with your Falcons connections, not fandom. Falcons fans were going to hear it from Saints fans once they got a Super Bowl because – as you know, Atlanta is very much New York to New Orleans, Boston.
Yes.
As it relates to the whole, you know, capital of the South dynamic, okay? Even though we got nothing but love for Atlanta, I had some amazing times in Atlanta. Like, it was a big deal to drive to Atlanta growing up in New Orleans. That was a major trip for a rite of passage. That was our pilgrimage as a young person to drive to Atlanta. There is nothing like the hatred, as you well know, between Saints fans and Falcons fans. So when 09 happened, The two biggest moments in Saints fans history is 09 and 28-3. And they're close. 28-3 is close second. It's a close second for them.
And you know what I also think is another dynamic, to be fair, is that, and this is truth that will sound like shade, but I know you will understand me. Folks from New Orleans don't really leave.
Never.
So if you're not going there to them, you're not necessarily going to know they're there. The internet has given us access to everybody.
Yes. No.
And so I'm here. I'm probably hearing from people that I otherwise would not have heard from before.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And to that end, post Katrina, that's obviously changed a lot now. But post Katrina, the most indigenous population in the country was New Orleans. Like it is so generational. People do not leave that community or did not leave that community, like talking about it. And even if they did, you know, even if you were a transplant, people take New Orleans with them wherever they go. So you move to New York, you move to L.A. My brother, that's the first person I called after the NFC Championship game, was my brother, to check on his emotional well-being. My brother been in L.A. for 30 years, damn near. And he still rides or dies and represents for the Saints. So it's an interesting dynamic that really you have to be in the middle of to truly understand that relationship. And now Saints fans have a problem on their hands, a dilemma on their hands, because they want to support the Saints and support their own, but they don't want to patronize the league anymore. You know, if they weren't boycotting the league already over Colin Kaepernick or what have you, they definitely want to be done with the NFL right now, because they all believe, you ain't going to tell them that the fix wasn't it.
I mean, you know why they think the fix was in, to be fair. They're from New Orleans.
Absolutely.
Like, the fix you being in is a reasonable conclusion.
Yeah.
The fix, somebody fixing something. Again, all the truth time. That sounds like shade.
Or not fixing anything.
Yeah.
As the case may be. or neglecting to fix what needs to be fixed.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine how cynical I would be if I was from New Orleans about any institution.
Man, my brother had because I took my brother, my stepdad, and my son. I actually took my son to his first Saints game. It's interesting, not being a Saints fan, but being from New Orleans. You can have it both ways. Like, it's almost like, like I said, a friend with benefits type thing. You know what I mean? And so I go there, and it's a homecoming of sorts for me a lot of times. And the experience was incredible. So for a day at least, I took my son to that weekend, that epic football weekend in Louisiana, where it was LSU-Alabama, which obviously didn't go so well for the home team, but the next day was Saints-Rams in the regular season. So my son, who, again, by birth and where he was born and his maternal side of the family, my son is a Patriots fan. But for that day, he got to know and got to learn what it meant to be a member of Who Dat Nation. And it was a glorious time, a glorious event, just to see him experience being a fan. And so it kind of brought out the little boy in me, having my little boy at the Saints game. But there's always this feeling, and this is what my brother was telling me. I asked him, you know, how he was coping. He said it was worse last year with the Marcus Williams situation.
I forgot. That was good, too.
Which, look at you, man. You're shameless.
What you mean? I don't understand what you're talking about.
You enjoyed that, too.
Oh, that was great.
But he said, and this kind of surprised me, because I thought, you know, that you'd be more upset with being robbed through no fault of your own than, you know, giving it up, you know, and somebody making a play and just taking a bad angle. He said he can deal with this one easier because he knew that the league wanted. look, with a straight face, too. You know, even I'm on the phone with him, I can hear the straight. Hey, he's like, here, look here, bro. Come on, bro. They got Atlanta. Excuse me. He said, they got New England, Boston, and L.A. You know the league want Boston and L.A. Come on, bro. You know Sean McVay is the golden child, bro. Come on, Woody. You know the fix was in. I'm like, man, it's bad, man. They made life hard for referees and officials everywhere. You can't officiate a volleyball or basketball game in New Orleans right now without getting ramshade.
Hey, y'all say so mad. They're so mad. Give us some good news, though, man. Anthony Davis trying to get out of town, too. They just disappeared him from the intro video at the arena. What New Orleans got to be happy about sporting-wise right now?
But see, they don't even care about Anthony Davis. They're too hung up on the Saints. That's my point about the Saints. Like, a transcendent 25-year-old, three-time first-team All-NBA player, they could practically care less. Because to your point about New Orleans, like, if you don't want to be there, that's fine. They're going to be all right without you. You know, like, they're not going to beg you to stay. New Orleans is going to be New Orleans. New Orleans doesn't have that Cleveland chip on its shoulder where they're the butt of jokes. Like, New Orleans knows that it's got it going on. And if you don't want to be there, that's cool. You know, no problem. All good. It's not the same as the Saints anyway. It's not really a basketball city, per se. They got their fans or whatever. They got their hardcore fans, but the city doesn't, its heartbeat isn't with the Pelicans the way that it is with the Saints. And so they're still in mourning over the Saints fiasco to where they can't even process Anthony Davis, not to mention Anthony Davis got every right to want out of there. I mean, let's call it what it is. He's been there 7 years. They didn't screw that up seven ways to Sunday when in terms of management. So they can't really begrudge him for wanting to go to a better situation. They're not necessarily taking it as you don't want our city. As right. much as it is, he just wants a better situation. So
that's an interesting distinction that I really hadn't thought about, because I do find that very often with these smaller places, like when Gordon Hayward left Salt Lake City.
Yeah. You don't want Utah.
Yeah, one of their radio guys said the thing that really bummed people out the most in Utah, and why they were, you know, part of why they were so mad, and they were basically like, if we can't keep this white dude here, we can't keep nobody.
Right.
Which, by the way, fair point.
Right.
They were just like, if we can't keep him.
Right. He's the most Utah Jazz player we've had in a long time.
Yeah. You know, like I said, they should have known he was gone when he started getting fresh haircuts.
You know what I'm saying?
That he was clamoring.
He started getting fades.
Yeah, he was aspiring for more at that point. But yeah, I hadn't thought about that, because with Cleveland, it really is, you don't want us. And yeah, New Orleans, they kind of like, yeah, you can do that.
Yeah. All good. We're going to still have, you know, the best culture around, you know, and if you want to be either with us or you're not, simple as that. We ain't got time to worry about you. And again, the Saint, that it happened, everybody talked about the timing as it relates to the trade deadline. Yeah, that makes sense for the Lakers and Rich Paul and LeBron and Magic Johnson and so on and so forth. From a New Orleans standpoint, that's a distant second, especially during Super Bowl week, to the bitterness that they still hold, that grudge they still hold over, as they believe, being robbed and the conspiracy to keep them out of the Super Bowl. My brother got a t-shirt that said, they don't want us to win. That's what I was trying. That's why I brought him up. They went to the Rams game in the regular season with a t-shirt saying, they don't want us to win. So that's how they feel.
And I would also say,
and it's a lot of Bounty Gate stuff too. I'm sorry to cut you off.
I forgot about that.
That's really the root of the league conspiracy aspect of this is, you know, they took a whole season. The league took a whole season from Sean Payton, you know, over Bounty Gate.
And also, I don't know where exactly Dell Demps is from, but let's be real about something. You're talking about, you know, the trade deadline and trying to squeeze or whatever. Let me tell you something New Orleans ain't never doing. New Orleans ain't never in no hurry.
Ain't that the truth?
You ain't about to make nobody hurry.
Ain't that the truth?
You ain't about to threaten them with no deadline.
You walk off the plane slow in New Orleans. You take your time getting off the plane, you know? We don't do anything in a hurry. We don't cook in a hurry. We don't study in a hurry. We don't work in a hurry.
You're only in a hurry when you got to run, huh?
You ever drove in New Orleans?
Yes, I have.
Bruh, like, they left lane is like 55. And I didn't realize how slow we drove in New Orleans until I got to New England. I'm like, oh, this is how you really drive. So when I go to New Orleans, I'm like, as my mama said, I drive like a bat out of hell. I'm like, well, this is what the left lane is for. It's for, you know, 75 and above, not cruising, you know. So anyway,
yeah, man. So how you
this has been the most tangential conversation I've had in a long time, and I love it.
Yeah,
love
but you
it.
Know what though? I think we stayed by and large within some bounds. No sense of family and community.
Yeah, man.
And you know, football, different kinds of violence. Like I think that everything
it all comes together.
Yeah, I think it all has come together in that way.
It's good
man.
To talk to you, man. It really is.
Dude,
always.
You too, man. I want to have you on this week as much as anything else. Is you are like as big a football nerd as anybody I know. And I don't mean that in no bad way. I just mean that you are, like you dig it on that level.
Yeah.
How hyped are you about this Super Bowl? Cause it feels like in 2019, you know, Super Bowl, we used to dominate everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like that anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it, to my surprise, does have to do with we're still kind of looking back, in many respects to the both championship games, more so the NFC than the AFC, which is unusual. Typically by this time, the page has been fully turned. I also think, there is some Patriots fatigue, not necessarily in terms of hatred, because I sense more appreciation this time around than hatred, given the difficult road the Patriots traveled. I just think people have kind of run out of things to talk about with them. You know, I mean, Brady, you know, putting to bed immediately the idea of him walking away, you know, that's not a storyline. You know, they're never going to trash talk like talking about it. Brady and Belichick's, you know, supposed friction seems like that happened years ago as opposed to just past offseason. I don't know. I do understand what you mean about it not seeming like there's as much hype. Also, too, I think when it comes to just the media news cycle, and this is so contradictory to everything I just said from a New Orleans standpoint, but that was in New Orleans. From a national standpoint, Anthony Davis just requested a trade.
Yes.
I mean, so if you are ESPN or Fox or, I mean, look, the NBA, nothing moves the needle. Nothing moves the needle like NBA speculation. Forget NBA games. NBA speculation drives the internet and social media like, am I wrong about that? Like,
No, you're 100% correct. And that's why I say it's kind of like the fragmentation of media. Because think about this, like Super Bowl Media Day.
Yeah.
While they still get a zillion people there to cover it, we got so much content now in so many other places and in so many ways right. that like the machine doesn't need it in the way that it needed all of that stuff before.
That's
like
a good
to
point.
Me,
it comes from it can come from outside of Atlanta now. The content,
right. Like to me, it's crazy that we're not talking about like great Marcus Peters footage from Media Day, because I don't know how somebody could come out of there without getting great Marcus Peters footage. But like, I don't have any recollection of anything that went on at Super Bowl Media Day. You ain't even got the people doing stuff anymore, like wearing dog collars, you know, and all this other stuff.
Yeah, man, you're
in
right.
part because this isn't their close-up anymore. They got Instagram accounts,
sure.
right? Like, this isn't the one time that America
is going to see. We're not just getting to know them. No, we're not learning about these people in a way that we haven't, because they've given us all the access already.
Yeah.
Especially a team like the Rams. I mean, the Rams have been so out there from a personality standpoint until there are very few stories to unearth. Super Bowl week used to really be a showcase for the media, not just, you know, Media Day and the circus like atmosphere and how wild that was with the silly questions and this, that, and the other. But it was really a showcase for writers to kind of flex their reporting muscle
yes.
and their storytelling muscle to really get access to players and like you said, introduce them, you know, not just with sound bites. I'm talking about from a print standpoint, a profile standpoint. Good old takeout, you know what I mean? Now, to your point, fans know these guys already, and that's intentional. So, yeah, it's the game has definitely changed. Or maybe it's just not as hype because we ain't there.
Maybe, right? But I also wonder this, though.
Did you give any consideration to going?
Oh, no, I'm going. I'm just
Oh, you are?
Yet.
When you going?
I'm going tomorrow.
Okay, you're going to represent. All right. That's
yeah,
good. That's
yeah.
Good.
No, I'm going to make it down there.
Is that? Do you have any struggles going home for events like that?
Nah, I have carved out a life where people understand that it is my schedule.
Okay. You also not, we have a lot in common. But a friend of mine recognized this in me a long time ago. I'm way too accommodating. So, therefore, I get stressed out. It's almost like I'm a player in the games.
Yeah.
When
no,
I go home for either Super Bowl or All-Star Weekend.
No, I'm pretty accommodating, right? But, like, the only people I'm obligated to go see are my parents.
Same here.
Right. You know, so I'll go see my mom.
You ever went in the city and never see your parents?
No.
Exactly.
No.
Would never think to do that.
No. One way or another. Unless I'm doing something where I'm like flying in and out the same day or something like that.
Right.
No, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to check them out. So like, I'll figure out how to catch up with them.
Right.
And then after that, I am fortunate in that the people in my life understand that I will do what I can.
Yeah.
But it ain't personal, you know?
Right.
And one thing about having this job, it's like a for better or worse situation. Everybody assumes you're busy.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to get down there and get out of this brick weather.
Bruh. I'm treating the weather like Saints fans treating that call. I'm just trying to avoid it. I'm just trying not to look at weather reports. I'm trying not to look at the temperature. It's like looking at the clock. Like, you know, you're at work or you're in class and you look at the clock. Don't look at the temperature. When I get in the car, I try not to look at the dashboard as best I can. This is incredibly brutal.
Yeah, let me tell you something about this cold, right?
And then I'm in Connecticut.
Yes.
You in New York, bro. It ain't that bad when you're in New York and it's cold.
That's the thing.
I'm in Connecticut.
I know. I'm dealing with brick, but you're dealing with like a whole nother level of brick.
You know what I'm saying?
You got like a brick made out of steel. But I was on, somebody was, you know, because people talk about the Canada Goose jackets, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we had this story out of Chicago. People be getting got for their Canada geese in Chicago.
Mm.
And you know what? I get it, man. You seen them numbers?
I honestly, I'm not familiar. I've heard of the brand, but I'm not really familiar with what makes them so special.
They're, I mean, for me, because I got one. It's a really good coat, right? Like, it's a very warm coat.
Okay.
That's, you know, that's
so
what it comes
to. Functionality.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I'm just trying to stay warm, baby. I'm just trying to stay warm.
Okay,
like,
but how would you compare it, though, to the old school, you know, starter jackets, though?
I'm talking it's a different class than that. And in fact, I got a North Face that I just don't feel like is in the same class as this one.
Is that right?
Yeah, but at the same time, all these brands got classes of coats. So I might not have even been matching up. It was just recommended to me that I get this, but they generally a level of resentment out of people because they cost a lot of money, and you know when people get things that cost a lot of money, they want to floss.
Cost a grip.
Yeah, they want to floss them, which, by the way, how you get got.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw the internet, some dude was talking about, basically he was like, yo, you swear you need an $800 coat, da-da-da-da-da, and all this stuff, you know, and I'm like, hey man, I understand where you're coming from. However, if you got $800 to spend on a coat, you better spend it.
Why not?
Right? Like, this is where you put your money.
Polar vortex.
Yeah. Tell me this. This is the example I use. If the heater broke at your house and they said it cost $800 to fix it, would you pay it?
Absolutely. And I certainly wouldn't ask them if I could pay five.
Right.
Because I want to pay the eight knowing that I'm going to get $800 quality work.
Right. So what is a coat if not a heater? Right.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Hey, let me tell you, man, I was out there in my expensive coat and it was working, Jack.
Like, so let me look this up. Like, do I need to get on this?
I just tell you this. I don't know what your coat situation is.
I mean, it's decent, yeah. But it ain't $800. But I mean, the way you're talking about it, you're not one of those dudes that just spend money just to spend money.
No, but see, that's what I'm saying. People are like, yo, I ain't spending that kind of money on a coat. And I'm like, what
are you? Investment.
Yeah. I say, there is no such thing as too warm for your coat, baby.
No such thing.
Especially now with what's going on outside. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, okay, no, I'm going to do this. There's somebody, and I saw a couple people walking on the street, and you could tell. They had their jacket, and the jacket was making them warmer than they would be otherwise, but they wasn't warm. When you see them, when they got their arms pulled in all extra tight?
Oh, okay, wait. Shop Canada Goose today, Neiman Marcus. All right, so this is a Neiman Marcus type joint.
You check it. You see it.
Okay.
But you know them people I'm talking about, right? They walking down the street, got both hands in their pocket,
yeah.
And they bringing it in like they doing flies.
Right. They have to work in addition to the jacket.
Yeah, I'm not doing that, man.
Yeah, you want the jacket to do what it's designed to do.
Whatever it takes.
So you got one with a hood and like the fur and all that?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
Oh, this is nice looking.
Hey, man.
Damn, $925.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But think about it. You remember the first time that you saw the price on a mattress and you was like, damn, a mattress cost that much?
But then you laid on it.
Yep.
And you slept well, and you had beautiful dreams.
And you realize, I once had a $150 mattress. No lie. When I was in graduate school in California, my mattress cost $150.
Man.
Because that's what I had for a mattress.
There are certain things that once you get money and you're able to spend it, you stop judging people spending money on certain things.
Right, you realize
like
what
you,
it
like,
is.
Like, because you, where the money goes, you're like, oh, so that's why people drive nice cars.
Right.
I was one of those people that was like, man, what do I need a car for? I'm a point A to point B person. I don't need to get an expensive car. That's a bad investment. It loses value as soon as you drive that thing off the lot. You know what I'm saying? Like, what am I spending money on a car for? Point A to point B. I drove Nissan Maximas my whole life, proudly. Then I got another car. Then I upgraded. I was like, oh, okay.
You put your booty on some leather and you were never going back
like,
to cloth.
Some heated leather. Oh, I'm like, okay. I'm like, I don't even hear the car. I don't feel the road. The leather is warm. I'm feeling like my man in Trading Places, whiskey.
Yes.
Oh, you warm, nice and warm in here. Like, oh, that's where the money goes. So yeah, man, like if you got, listen, God bless the people that are freezing that don't have $925. But if you got $925, I can think of a lot of things that are worse to do with that $925.
That's what
than
I'm,
get a coat.
That's my point.
That, as you describe it, when you walk down the street, you don't have to do exercises to keep your blood flowing.
That's my point. That's all I'm saying.
I'm with you.
And my thing is,
what color did you get?
Navy blue.
Okay.
But my thing is, like, if you can find a cheaper way to do it, then by all means, find a cheaper way to do it. But I had a cat hit me. He was like, well, I paid $500 for this coat, and it's just as good as this other one. And I'm like,
because you ain't never had.
That's what I say. The only way you would know if it was just as good as this one is if you had this one.
Yeah.
And I know that you don't have this one.
Because you wouldn't say
because
that.
Because you have that one. Right? Like you just told me. That, right. Like, and it's like, I get you.
Right.
If that's what you got to spend, then absolutely you should spend it. But man, I'm not going to be out here being cold talking about I saved $200.
This ain't car insurance, man. Like you don't need to have a discount. You know what I mean? You don't need to do that. Like,
trying to guess on your coverage.
You know what I'm saying? Like you need to invest soundly in certain things. Like, okay, you spend money on a watch, quality watch. You do not buy a cheap watch. If you're going to buy a cheap watch, you might as well use a cell phone.
Right.
You buy quality watches. You buy automatic watches. You know, you buy good jackets.
Right.
Buy nice shoes.
Right. Mattress.
Mattress. You know, that's absolutely. See, because you know what? You didn't put me up on something. Because now you got me reevaluating. Because I'm one of them cats that's got three t-shirts on.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I got on like a thermal. I got on a hoodie. And then the jacket.
Yeah.
So I got all these layers where it sounds like I could be naked under this jacket you're talking
that's
about.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, what are you doing, mister? My car don't make no noise.
What
you out here wearing?
It's the habit. It's the habit.
Yep.
It's just that I've always been in the habit of not, you know, I mean, I got a nice jacket, but, you know, I you know what? Here's my comeback. I spend so much time in the car that I don't need the jacket like talking about it.
And you know what? That is interesting because I live in New York.
You walking everywhere.
I'm in the streets.
You walking everywhere.
That's the part about the cold weather here that you don't think about. You in it, dog.
Yeah.
Listen, yesterday I left work and it was cold, and that wind was whipping, right? But I got in the train. I got about 25, 30 minutes on the train. I got out, and somehow, I don't know what they call it, but it was a 30-minute torrential downpour of snow. I got out. I came up out the hole.
I saw that.
I'm walking down the street. I couldn't look because the wind was blowing in my face. I couldn't look straight and walk at the same time. It wasn't possible. I had the Elmer. I got the Elmer Fudd hat on. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I ain't leaving nothing to chance. I had to turn my head sideways and look over every now and then to make sure I ain't walk into nobody.
Man.
This ain't how we supposed to live.
But it's worth it, though, right? I mean, it is New York.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is for New York where I got questions. And we all make choices and we all got preferences. No disrespect. But them people that be living in them states that don't have dots, in places that don't got dots, but it's like a negative 40 degree wind chill. You understand what I'm saying? Like when you pull up a map of that place, it ain't no dot.
Yeah.
And it's like 50 degrees below zero right now. What is so cracking about where you at?
I think it's just gotta be lack of options. Gotta be.
But
that can't be a decision that they came to willingly in those places right about there.
Look, this is all I'm going to say, right? Sam Kennison, God rest his soul, told a joke that I'm not sure that you could get away with in this day and time, but I'm going to say Sam Kennison is the one telling the joke.
Right.
But you ever see where he was talking about the famine in Ethiopia?
Refresh my memory.
And he was just like, we need to stop sending, you know, I feel bad for all those people who are starving, but we don't need to send them anything else. No more aid, no more money, nothing else. We need to send them U-Hauls so they can move where the food is. Now, of course, this is a ridiculous premise,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And a foolish idea.
Yeah.
However, I would like to suggest to some of these people that they move where the warm is.
Listen. Why are you in New York? Well, you got to be for work.
Well,
you got to be. Okay.
I didn't necessarily have to
be
here for work.
I'm about to say, because this is somebody who just left Miami.
Yeah.
But so New York, I'm just dawned on me.
Here's
like,
what I'm saying, though. But New York is cracking. I'm talking about people that's in places that ain't cracking.
I hear you. But I mean, I want to know, is it cracking enough for days like you just described yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it is. Here's the thing about New York, and I'm not quite one of these people, but this is what I say about New York. You have to, for I'd say 99.5% of people on the income distribution, you have to love it here to live here.
Yeah. And I don't love it. Like, people have asked me whether I want to live there or whatever. I don't love, it's actually too busy for me. That goes back to what I was saying about New Orleans, where it's like a famous big little town. It's really, one end of New Orleans to the other is 10 minutes away. I've done it, you know, okay? So it's not that big of a city. New York is just a little too much for me.
But you know what, though? I bet if you lived here, it wouldn't feel like that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, because if you lived here and it's like it's settled within your routine and where you live, because the other thing that happens when you come here is if you come here and you stay in a hotel, your hotel is going to be in a place that's busy.
Yeah, right. I usually stay in Times Square.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's what it's going to feel like. But when you live here, like, you're going to feel like you live in a neighborhood. It's going to be a different kind of neighborhood than you're accustomed to, but you wind up feeling like you live in a neighborhood. Cause, like, if you can get here and you got the means to do it, you can do literally, like, whatever you want that doesn't involve a beach or a casino, basically, here.
You know, I may need to do it. Like, I was asking you why you're in New York, cause I was about to say, I'm in Connecticut. And I was here for work, you know?
Yeah.
But work has evolved. Work has changed a little bit for your boys. So it's like, do I still want to be in Connecticut? My daughter loves her school and we love our house and we love our neighborhood. But on days like today, I'm like, I want to at least feel the joy that Obomani feels that gets him through this in his Canada Goose coat.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah. No, New York. Like I have been.
So should I come? Should I? You know, let's do New York together.
Oh yeah, we could come through in New York and like we could make this happen. Like think about New York, like the things that you can Google, and I'm bad at this, but the things that you can Google and just find here, dope. And I live in Harlem, which is the blackest place in the United States of America. And I mean, and people talk about the white folks moving to Harlem. Okay, well, the white folks have moved to the blackest place in the United States of America. Now, you can go down south like New Orleans. New Orleans, black as hell. You can go all kinds of places that are like extraordinarily black and have lots of black people. Places that have more black people by percentage even than Harlem does.
Right.
The difference is Harlem is giving you like every black. every form of it, the dashiki black, right. Your Air Jordans black, everything else. Every restaurant is playing beats. Every single one of them is knocking. They might be knocking how they knocked in the 70s or knocking how they knocked in the 90s, but wow. Every shoe store, coffee shop, restaurant, wow. Whatever it is knocking.
Yeah, you got to just take me walking around Harlem, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, no, like I'm like you, man. I'm from the South. And all we talk about in the South is how this New York thing, what they even talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of, I do have some of that. I mean, I respect New York and everything like that, but it always seemed like it was, what's the big deal?
Yeah, no, I aged out of that a bit. This is what's up. Like what I didn't realize, and it's interesting hearing you say that, is Boston and New York are so separate.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And yeah, that's something that you don't know from the outside. They're not close to each other.
Right.
And like being in proximity of one doesn't give you really access or concept of the other.
Absolutely. And it's just very different too. The energy and the feel, there's a different level of, and I'm not saying necessarily Boston is not sophisticated, but there's a different level of sophistication, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
You know, just different. Not more, not less, just different.
No. I totally understand.
And that's spoken to somebody who doesn't spend a lot of time in New York, but obviously did spend most of his adult life in Boston and New England. I get the whole, you know, dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah, because this is a totally different place.
Absolutely.
They are not, but now I wanted to be here because this is a place that I thought had creative people. Right. And that would help me be a more creative person.
And like have I you found to, that?
Yeah.
Good.
Because people are just here doing dope stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. If somebody.
I thought about L.A. too. Like, yeah. I thought about, you know, whether I do L.A. or New York. Because I've spent my, like I said, my whole adult life in Boston, from New Orleans to Boston to Bristol. So that big city living, you know, both professionally and personally, never really had it, especially since I settled down and got married, you know, young, started a family very young, raising kids. Like, my priorities have not necessarily been, you know, cultural experiences per se. It's really been about school systems. It's been about proximity to work. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. So, you know, as I transition to this next chapter, man, like, you know, I might have to consider New York or L.A., but you know, the vibe there works for you, huh?
Yeah, no, I like L.A. too. L.A.'s cool. L.A. just kind of sprawls. Like, that's the one thing about it. Like, the thing about New York, there's something cool about the idea that even if it takes a long time to get around this bad boy, everything just feel close. The problem is, would also feel close to that person leaning up on you on that train.
On your Canada Goose jacket.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but you know what, though? He probably got a jacket on, too. like I was just looking outside. And honestly, like, coat privilege is a real thing. Like, we talking about that Canada Goose or whatever. It's a real thing, though, because you just think about, like, when people have coat drives. Mm-hmm. Imagine you living here and you ain't got a coat.
Ain't got a coat. That's crazy.
Forget about a good coat.
Right.
Like, you don't have a coat.
Man.
Can't imagine. Can't imagine. And that's the life that people live. Cause New York, if you don't got the bread, that's why I say you gotta love it. Mm-hmm. Cause you gotta be able to pay for it.
Right.
And for what it's worth, there are clearly millions and millions of people who love it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's got his hook. I don't even know what we started off and we supposed to talk about. We've been going now for about an hour, man.
Have we?
We have.
Have we solved the problem? I guess we were basically.
Now we're going like 48 minutes.
We were trying to solve New Orleans tough week.
Yes.
That's basically what we're here to do.
Yeah.
So
we came up with the fact that there isn't really a solution.
I have a question for you though. Like, okay, so you're not a Falcons fan, but how would you have processed, dealt with, covered if it would have been Saints Patriots in Mercedes-Benz Stadium?
I wouldn't have gone to Atlanta.
Why? Because you don't want to deal with both those fan bases?
I don't think it would have been safe.
Okay. Okay.
I think it would have been unsafe.
Okay. Real talk.
Cause you know y'all was going
to. You might need security.
You know they was going to come act a donkey. Like.
Absolutely.
You know that. I know that.
You remember them bus ride time?
Yeah. The church bus comes for any other game. Let alone, like, this game. Like, this is a trollapalooza.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. This is the most glorious trolling opportunity that anybody ever would have. And if I was in the same situation, I would absolutely maximize my opportunity to do so. Mm-hmm. And so, no, I wouldn't have done
it.
I
was here for Saints in the Falcons Stadium.
No, I wasn't here for that at all. And see, the thing about the Patriots is, you don't have to ask, like, Falcons fans about this, because I'm off that narcotic. But I would say that the Patriots didn't really do nothing to the Falcons.
Yeah.
That was just the Falcons being who they are.
Mm.
You understand what I mean? Like the Falcons, the Patriots were just a vessel for the Falcons achieving their destiny.
For the Falcons to Falcon.
Yeah, I don't feel like you can blame that on the Patriots or put it on anything else. It was just their opportunity to achieve their destiny, and then they did that. The Saints, man, that's personal relationship, and they was going to be personal jerks all up in the city. A city, by the way, that ain't always that safe, and it would be a bunch of jerks from a city that, by the way, ain't all that safe.
You know? It's like something's got to give. That's true. That might not have been as much fun and games as I'm thinking it would have been. It would have definitely gotten personal. And that's, you're right, because it's not personal for me anymore. It is for sure personal for the people who are still in that vortex. Because I mean, I've seen some of the Twitter back and forth between Falcons and Saints Twitter. It's not pretty. And that would have been a lot of people's Temecula, I imagine, where they just said, okay, now's the opportunity. Dude, could you imagine some of the fights in the clubs?
As I have told you.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. This was what was best for all parties involved, exactly, to not have that team in Atlanta.
Bro, I told you, a woman in this industry that I'm cool with who's from New Orleans, I sent her something once to antagonize her about a Saints loss. I think it was the one in Minnesota last year.
Oh, last year, yeah.
She responded by sending me a picture from Jim Brown's nude Playboy spread.
See, you go low, we go lower.
Yep. She didn't find any humor in this. That's exactly it. Yeah. The Michelle Obama was not strong in her. It was not. And I'm just saying, like, we didn't need it.
I was in the JW Marriott in L.A. when it happened. I was standing next to my brother watching it on those, you know, the big TVs they got in that lobby. I'm watching the game as it happened with my brother, and the look on his face was one of such, God, he just deflated. But deflated doesn't begin to describe it, you know, because I mean, it's just, and I'm remembering the Marcus Williams play. And I said to him, I was like, see, bro, I was like, that's why I told you, you need to join me. I'm like, you need to come with me. You need to mess with your boy and come to this single life when it comes to sports teams, especially this one, man, because I didn't see Michael Haynes take a hitch right up the sideline.
Sure did.
I didn't see Randall Cunningham throw to Fred Barnett and Calvin Williams in the dome, you know? Like, but I'll tell you what, and then my brother was like, you know what, though? 09 made it all worth it. You know, 09 made it worth it. And I told him, you know, even though I'm not a fan, even though I'm not a Saints fan, some of my fondest sports memories as an adult, as a professional, have been with that organization. Because when I was an intern at the Globe and I went back to New Orleans for college, I was a stringer at that point during the school year, and I covered Saints Rams in the dome. Ass Hakeem muffed the punt, first ever playoff win.
Yeah.
Loudest stadium I'd ever heard until fast forward to 2006, and I'm on the sideline. I'm in the end zone. Okay, like in the corner of the end zone, the same end zone where Steve Gleason blocked the punt. And that was chills. Like, people talk about getting chills for sporting events. Like, bro, I think a lot of it too. And, you know, you know this. You've been in the industry for a long time. Like, we become so caught up in the work aspect of it to where the fan in us doesn't truly get to enjoy it the same way that everybody else is enjoying it. Ever so often, something will happen, you know, Game 7 Warriors Celtics, where you get to be a fan again and you start to feel those chills. That's what happened to me on the sideline. And coming back from Katrina and the emotion in that building, just, you know, everybody, you know, returning home and the reopening of the dome and Monday Night Football, the energy in there, I've never felt anything like that until Tracy Porter picked off Peyton Manning. And I tell you, I cried like a baby, man. I cried like a baby, you know, because I remember my grandfather. I remember all those Sundays coming from church and watching the Saints game. I remember, you know, Bobby Hebert and Eric Martin running them crossing routes over and over. I just remember the Dome Patrol. Like, that was my childhood, and I knew what it meant to the city. So when people say get over it, move on, it happens to every team. Every blown calls happen all the time. It's part of the game. No. Save that. A, you ain't seen nothing like this. Okay, there have been some egregious calls, but I don't know that we've seen something this blatant. Have we? Have we?
We haven't.
Okay,
yeah.
So there's that part, and you just really have to understand what that team means to that city, man. We ain't like them Falcons fans, you know. You see, I say we right there. We ain't like them Falcons fans that come and go, that show up late to games, that don't really care that much.
Yeah, forgive them for living in a place that's got, you know.
That's got stuff going on.
Look. All I'm saying is you talk about that game in 2006 with the Monday Night Football and everything.
I'm sorry. Did that bring up bad memories for you?
All I'm saying is wasn't everybody rooting for the Saints that day. That's all. That is becoming an immortalized moment, and it's bigger. Sometimes things are bigger than you, you know? However, I don't recall that nearly the way that you do.
How do you recall it?
I mean, that was before Michael Vick went to jail.
Gotcha. He was the quarterback then.
So, yeah, I was still on board with that. I took no joy in Steve Gleason blocking that punt. Why would I do that?
I don't know, because you're human. You couldn't give it up for one night. Even Jim Mora gave it up that one night. Now, granted, he has unique ties to the Saints. Even he understood that was bigger than football that night.
I just said that it was bigger than football.
But you still couldn't find it in your heart to...
Not in the moment. Like, maybe after some years.
And that, more than anything we've discussed, encapsulates what it means to grow up in and be a part of the Saints-Falcons rivalry. Like, even a city coming back from disaster, first game back in a dome that was a literal house of horrors for evacuees or people seeking shelter from the storm, Falcons fans couldn't find it in their heart to enjoy that moment for the Saints. Falcons fans could not find it in their heart to be
exactly
like,
what I'm
good
saying.
For them. You could not be like, good for them.
No. This is zero sub game. No. I mean, it could have been good for them against somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, ain't nobody trying to be no co-star in your play.
You sure you all the way off that narcotic?
Yeah, I told you that went back to.
You sound a little.
That went back to when I was on the narcotic. And gotcha. I just feel
so
like.
You can reflect on it, but it's not still in there.
All I'm saying is this. They always show that clip and it's a motivational, heartwarming moment. It don't warm everybody's heart.
Right. We need to recognize.
Yeah. Like there was other people who was there. Like. Nah, that I think you probably find that analogy I was about to make to be a little bit crass.
Way to catch yourself.
Yeah. No, I do that all the time. I ain't about to lose it talking about no damn football game. What are you, crazy? This at least ain't up till July.
Who did you get on when you left the Falcons?
Nobody.
Okay.
Nobody.
All right. That's a safe way to go. Me too.
Well, also, I couldn't sincerely. Just go jump on another team.
You may judge me for this when I disclose this. But this is before it was really popping, at least in the 90s. I went over and became a Cowboys fan.
I'm not even mad at that.
This was remember they drafted Irvin in 88,
mm-hmm.
Aikman in 89,
mm-hmm.
and then Emmitt in 90,
mm-hmm.
and bringing it back to the Falcons in 91. I remember, I think it was a Thursday night game. Where Michael Irvin gave Prime the business.
Yep.
Just like slants all day. Just nothing but slant routes all day. And I believe they went 11-5, the Cowboys did 91. So after that season, my timeline might be off.
No, that was 91.
I remember I said I gave up on the Saints after the 92 season and 93 playoffs. That year, the Cowboys won the Super Bowl in 92. So I guess I did kind of jump on the Cowboys bandwagon.
No. You know what it was? What? That was the 91. That was January 92. That was the 91 Falcons that went to the playoffs. Because the 91 Falcons.
No, but remember I told you I got off after the Eagles lost.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was the 92.
Season 93 playoffs.
Yeah.
So that was the year that the Cowboys won the first Super Bowl. So
no,
I think I was a bandwagon.
Yeah,
damn, I was a bandwagon jumper.
But it was a fun bandwagon to jump on.
Yeah, it was still pure. It was still pure, right?
Kinda?
Sorta? You know? Yeah.
I'll judge you, man. Hey, I had a friend in grad school. He'd be like, I like winners, cuz. That was his thing. I like winners. He just found a way. Who was he rooting for in any given game, anytime? He would find a way to root for the team that was going to win.
Yeah.
Every time.
That's my guy.
He's like, oh, I like winners, cuz. And I'll never forget because he went to school or like knew J.R. Redman back in the day? You remember J.R. Redman?
Of course I remember J.R. Redman. I'm just surprised that that name popped up.
So I was watching.
I covered J.R. Redman.
Right. I was watching that first Super Bowl with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for some reason, the Patriots had J.R. Redman on the field for that drive.
Absolutely.
And keep in mind that this Patriots victory is so unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Patriots win. And all my man keeps saying is,
that's my boy.
J.R.! J.R.! And he knew he had once again found a way to wiggle in and sign up with the winner.
Hilarious.
Yes.
Hilarious.
Michael Smith, man, this has been entertaining.
I hope so, man. I hope it's entertaining for your listeners. Like, I just enjoy chopping it up with you.
I think they'll be able to dig it.
I hope so, man, because I ain't got no hot takes, man. I'm just out here living. I just got back from Hong Kong. I'm still in like a time zone difference. Like I'm still 13 hours ahead right now. I'm fried.
How many stamps have you gotten in the last year?
Quite a few. Dubai, Kenya, Hong Kong, Puerto Rico. I don't know if they count. That doesn't count as a stamp.
I don't think so.
No, that doesn't count.
Although I bet if you ask most Americans.
Yeah, right. I'm just naming the places and spaces I've been. But yeah, it's been good, man. Just trying to make some memories, trying to raise some global citizens as best I can.
You know? And, you know, learning how to do, you know, that Israeli haya.
I actually, you know what? I'm about to go to class right now, man.
This is a serious question about that. Like, how far back does that martial art go?
You know what? I wish I could do a better job of reciting the history. It's a few decades old.
Yeah, that's what I was about
to
say.
But it's grown in popularity and it's spread.
I'm just saying, high on the list to stay ready all-stars is the Israeli military.
Oh, trust me.
And it's mandatory conscription over there, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just saying that, like you said, you're not out here for the art, you're out here for the effectiveness.
Yeah,
which,
no.
And like, they seem like they'd be the people to learn the effectiveness from.
Right on. Like, I'm not going to class. The stuff I'm doing right now is not for show, it is not for competition.
Yeah, you can't
it
have
is
a competition.
For survival.
You can't have a competition on this stuff. Like, they like, look, man, all my life I've had to fight, and I ain't got time no more.
Exactly.
Hey, man, I appreciate
you. Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me. It's always a pleasure. Seriously.
Let's yeah, man, all good. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here twice a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Check us out at the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you're a hater. Talk to you in a couple days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.